You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to tonight's live broadcast. This Saturday evening, October the 10th, it is an embarrassment of riches tonight on TPC. From one titan to the next we go. Jared Taylor in the first hour. Peter Brimelow now back with us for the second hour. Peter Brimelow, of course, is the editor of VDare.com and the author of the best-selling book, Alienation, Common Sense, about America's immigration disaster. Immigration will be on the docket this hour. Peter, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me, James. Appreciate it.
Well, we were talking earlier, and we'll ask the question again. With Election Day now less than 4 weeks away, if you were advising the president, what must Trump do now to best ensure his chances for re-election?
Ha! Well, you know, it's always the same for us at VDare.com, James. You know, we've said that he ought to just emphasize the need to maintain the immigration moratorium, which he has in fact enacted through administrative methods. But he also has to campaign on it. For example, when the Democrats were asked in a debate, the Democratic candidates were asked in a debate about health care, he should immediately say, "Well, you've said you're going to extend free health care to the 11 to 20 million illegal immigrants who you're going to amnesty in. And who's going to pay for this? American taxpayer." But I mean, we know that Trump's not going to do that. He appears to be in the grip of the Kushner Rove axis, and they want to keep immigration out of the debate. But it is extraordinary because he has actually done this. I mean, you know, they as I was saying to you earlier, they have succeeded through administrative methods in dramatically reducing the illegal immigrant inflow. And the immigrant population, the immigrant workforce population in the U.S. has been falling now for 13 months. Of course, it could easily be reversed if the executive branch changes hands. But he has done it. The funny thing is he's not campaigning on it.
And that, as much as any issue, perhaps more than any issue, is what catapulted him into the White House 4 years ago. And so that's interesting.
I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary if you think about it, you know. I mean, and people don't think about it because they don't want to think about it. But all he did was he said in his announcement speech, he was critical of Mexican illegal immigration. And at that point, he took the lead in the polls, and he never looked back. And yet that's just simply not been assimilated by the political class. They don't realize how powerful this is.
Well, exactly. I mean, you would think you would go back to what worked before. But, I mean, as you mentioned, Peter, I mean, VDare has been talking about it for years and years. It's the bread and butter there, and rightly so. I was talking with Pat Buchanan on this very show over a decade ago, and he was saying the key to electoral success for the Republicans is to, in his own words, on this very program, go hunting where the ducks are. So right. VDare has published information to this effect that the Republicans can actually compete well into the mid-century mark if they would just up their percentage of the white vote. And that is really what's been so maddening. I was talking with Jared about this in the first hour. What's so maddening about covering the Trump administration or President Trump himself is that he has such high highs. He does things that no other elected official would do, all the way down to dog catcher. He does it as the sitting president of the United States. And then he does something as entirely nonsensical as this platinum plan to try to pull his black vote totals up out of the single digits, going hunting where the ducks are, competing into the mid-century. Why won't Trump do that?
You're completely correct. I mean, we started looking at this question in 2000, just about the same time that VDI was founded. At that stage, there was this tremendous conventional wisdom, which the Republicans, of course, bought, that they had to appeal to minority outreach. Well, we looked at the numbers, and we found that the problem is that the Republicans had is that they simply weren't getting a high enough white share. And so you'd hear people say, for example, that California is now out of reach for Republicans because of immigration. When you looked at the numbers, you found that the Republican presidential candidates were not getting a majority of the white vote in California. The demographics of California are not that much different from Texas. But what happens in Texas is that the whites vote heavily Republican, not as heavily Republican as in the Deep South, but they do vote heavily Republican. And then for some reason, they weren't able to do that in California, largely because they don't make an explicit appeal to the white vote. So for about 20 years, well, 15 years, we were saying this. And Steve Saylor in particular, who's written for the Lot, was arguing that the real target opportunity were in the Midwest and so on. And then suddenly Trump comes along and does this. He did somehow implicitly appeal to the white vote, and that's why he won in 2016. Now, the really weird thing is, having done that, he doesn't seem to be continuing it. He's done nothing on a legislative front on immigration. He's not cut immigration back legislatively. He's not, he endorsed the RAISE Act, which would have legal immigration, but they made no effort to force it through. He's done nothing about birthright citizenship. He didn't abolish the refugee statutes, which allow people to import vast numbers of expedited, subsidized, politically favored legal immigrants. Now, he has, and this is typical of him, he has dramatically reduced the refugee inflow. Obama's plan to have 120,000 in his last year, and Trump has got it down to 10,000. And that has a very dramatic effect because it's basically defunding a large area of the left. But all these various leftist NGOs, non-government entities, which were the business of importing refugees, dumping on the local welfare system, and then leaving, paying themselves vast amounts of money in the process. And they've been completely defunded and devastated by this development. But still, it could be reversed. The statute wasn't attacked, that's a very distressing thing.
Well, for any faults that the president might have when compared to his exhilarating candidacy, I think we can all agree, certainly, that he is the far superior choice to Joe Biden. Now, we're coming up very nearly on our first break of the hour, but we'll try to shoehorn this in, and we can certainly continue it after the break. But a Biden presidency, Peter, and correct me if I'm wrong, the way I see it, would equate to unlimited immigration. We've heard the thing about there's room here for 1 billion Americans, and what that means presumably is that the balance between the number of our population now and 1 billion will become exclusively from the third world. Are we looking at a complete immigration apocalypse if Joe Biden wins next?
Yeah, it's an immigration surge. There will increase legal immigration. There'll amnesty in 11-20 million.
Well, and right on cue, there is the music. We'll repose this question to you when we come back, so you can have a little more time to answer it before we continue on what will be a riveting hour of talk radio. We have got an incredible agenda this hour with our featured guest, Peter Brimelow, VDare.com. Ladies and gentlemen, check it out. Bookmark it. Visit it daily, VDare.com. We'll be.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems at all times and in all places is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, as I said with our first guest of the evening, in a day and age when so many people come in, burn the candle at both ends, and fade quickly, you can count on your fingers and toes the number of individuals and organizations who have consistently produced valuable results year after year after year. And like Jared Taylor, Peter Brimelow sits at the tip of that spear. Please support his work. Make it one of your daily reads there at vdare.com. Before the break, Peter, we were talking about the contrast between Trump and Biden with any disappointment we might have with Trump when compared to the alternative. We better pray that he pulls another rabbit out of the hat and wins re-election, or what will happen with regards to the immigration question, which to me, is the question, the most important question. Demographics is destiny. We all know that. What happens if Biden's elected on that issue?
I mean, what they'll do is what they'll plan to do in 2016. They'll just swamp out the historic American nation. They'll bring in enormous numbers of immigrants who they are confident will vote Democratic through amnesty, which, of course, will trigger lots of further waves of immigration because of the family reunification farce. And through those relaxed controls at the border, and they'll increase legal immigration, and they'll also dramatically increase refugee settlements, which is very useful to them because they can plant these refugees in American areas, as they have done, for example, in Maine. They've converted Lewiston, Maine, into a Somali enclave, and that's what they're doing. Well, they're simply target American communities all around the country and dump these third world refugees on them. So they're going to try and knock the U.S., the historic American nation, out. And they have a lot of other interesting plans as well. For example, they want to carve out new states in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands and so on, to make sure that they can institutionalize the leftist majority.
Well, and Peter, you and I were also talking earlier today, pre-show, about the whole gambit of making D.C. a state so they can sneak in two more Democratic senators, and you had a pretty good response to that.
Well, you know, one thing that really irritates me about American political debate, James, is that, you know, we're not allowed to have ideas. They get to have ideas about all kinds of all things they want to do to us, such as, for example, packing the Supreme Court or impeaching justices who vote the wrong way, as they were proposing to do at the time of Obama. But we don't get to have new ideas. But I have a lot of new ideas. I mean, one of them is I think that all these state boundaries should be redrawn to carve out American majorities. And one of them is we should settle this question of D.C. by simply putting it into Maryland or into Northern Virginia or something, you know, or carve out a new state. And so Puerto Rico should be thrown out of the union, make it be independent the way the Czechs threw the Slovaks out of the union, or the Malayans, Malaysians threw Singapore out of their federation. You know, let's settle this question once and for all. I have a lot of interesting ideas as well. For example, I think we should not only institute about birthright citizenship, the ability of people born in the U.S. From illegal immigrant parents, at the moment they immediately count as citizens. We should abolish that, of course. And Trump talked about it, but hasn't actually done it. But it should be done retroactively. I mean, let's go back to 1965 and say anybody who was born here of illegal immigrant parents is no longer a citizen. Why not? They would do this. Why can't we do it? I don't see any reason why we can't extend the period of, you know, the waiting period for citizenship. Why does it have to be 5 years? Why can't it be 20 years? It was briefly 15 years, I believe, in the late 18th century. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No. You're the guest, so by all means, you take the floor. But I was just going to say, and I posed this rhetorical question to you earlier, that is, of course, the overlords of our society are the practitioners of diversity, but they don't value diversity of opinion. And in fact, they punish diversity of opinion, and as we know all too well. But I wanted to ask you this with regards to the immigration question. We all know, of course, demographics is a racial headcount by and large. But this is something that not a lot of people are talking about. I had the opportunity at almost exactly this time 4 years ago. I believe it was the second week of October in 2016, so it would be about 2 weeks prior to Election Day 2016. I was actually up in Michigan. I was there to give a speech, and I also appeared on a television program in Michigan. Trump won Michigan that year by 10,000 votes, Peter, and I'm trying to find my numbers here, and this was from one of the ubiquitous Twitter commentators, but this is an underappreciated senior voter dynamic. 4 million senior citizens die every single year in America. So by Election Day 2020, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Trump 2016 senior voters will be dead. He won Michigan by 10,000 votes. Similar swing states hang by such a razor-thin margin. How many of those seniors who might have passed away? How does that factor in with the demographic and immigration question? And does Trump even stand a numerical chance of winning when you factor that in?
You know, I think all of that's going to be swamped if you can just simply increase his share of the white vote. I mean, Trump's share of the white vote in 2016 was not actually all that great. It was like 56-57%, I believe. Now, there were two third parties running that year who took predominantly white votes. So the Democrats' share of the white vote was very low. In fact, for the first time, I believe, a majority of voters for the Democrat presidential candidate were non-white. That's a dramatic development, and it explains the peculiar course that their politics have taken. You know, why have they got Kamala Harris, who was a very weak presidential candidate? Why was she shoehorned in by the Democratic establishment? Because they feel the need to hold on to this non-white vote, which they don't really understand, but they know is there. So, as I say, the issue that Trump's got is why can't he increase his share of the white vote? I'm afraid the reason for this is that he's simply not done enough to do it. And, of course, that means, on the one hand, we should have had to fight the last 4 years on whether or not he was going to cut legal immigration, or whether or not he was going to, by statutory methods, abolish birthright citizenship. And he just didn't do it. Now, it's part because the Senate Republicans, the Congressional Republicans, didn't want to do it. But, of course, he could have forced them to do it. He could have made it an issue. And he's not made it an issue, and therefore he's not resonating as much as I think he should have done. He could have done with the American, the white population in America. That's to say, the American population in America. And that's very, very unfortunate.
Based upon the current trajectory, Peter, can he win in 4 weeks? Can he win?
You know, I've given up trying to predict these things, James. You know, I mean, after Brexit and then after Trump in 2016, and actually even after the Boris Johnson's re-election, yes, I think he can win. It's looking increasingly difficult, and he's not helping himself by things like this stupid platinum plan, which was an utterly ridiculous attempt to appeal to black votes, people aren't going to vote for him anyway. Or for that matter, I don't think he helped himself by disavowing the Proud Boys on Sean Hannity last Friday.
We should talk about that.
All he had to say was, you know, the Proud Boys, whatever else they are, they're a multiracial group.
Hold on right there, Peter Brimelow. I will tell you this. Peter Brimelow and I shared the stage at Ameren in 2016, and I predicted in the spring of that year that Trump would win in an electoral landslide. That was before anyone thought he would. And I was right about that. I do not feel, Peter just alluded to it, as confident this time. So much more to talk about, and we will continue this conversation. We'll pick up with the Proud Boys when we come back.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
We love you. We love you.
Thank you.
We love you.
I love you too.
We love you.
Enthusiastic supporters showing up for President Trump's first event since being diagnosed with COVID-19 last week. President Trump, speaking from the White House balcony, says a vaccine is coming out very, very soon.
And we're producing powerful therapies and drugs, and we're healing the sick, and we're going to recover, and the vaccine is coming out very, very quickly in record time, as you know.
Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden, campaigning in Pennsylvania, was asked about the president's event at the White House.
I think it's important the president make sure that he is clear. He is not a spreader like his... Like Dr. Fauci said, the super spreader event he had for the Supreme Court announcement.
This is USA Radio News.
You know, it's true. Difficult times have a way of focusing us. We have to think about what matters most when it comes to our spending, our health care. No doubt, this is why so many people are joining MediShare right now. MediShare is a trusted way to save up to 50% on your monthly health care costs. More than 400,000 people have already made the switch. It's pretty obvious why, too, especially now during this challenging season with healthcare costs and out-of-pocket expenses going up. MediShare can save you a lot of money. The typical family saves $500 a month. And MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry that's worked beautifully for 27 years. There are different options to choose from to fit your budget. I'll give you the number here in a second. And if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Maybe now is the perfect time to make the switch and start saving. Here you go. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
No deaths are being reported from Hurricane Delta. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards says he's very thankful, but noted people still need to be careful in the immediate aftermath. The storm made landfall as a Category 2 hurricane on Friday. USA Radio Network's Val Dior has more on Category 2 storms.
A Category 2 hurricane is defined by winds of 96 to 110 miles per hour, not considered too extreme for those living in a hurricane zone, except this storm, Delta, is hitting the exact same area as Laura did back on August 26th, and she was a Cat 4 storm. leaving many still living in shambles, which means finding adequate shelter might have been tougher than normal. The good news, hurricane season ends on November 30th.
Full containment is drawing near for the Bobcat Fire in Los Angeles National Forest. The blaze has blackened over 115,000 acres and is listed at 90% containment. USA Radio News.
Oh yeah.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back with the incomparable Peter Brimelow of VDare.com. It's among my daily reads. It should be among yours as well. VDare.com. Support the work going on there. There are not many organizations out there worthy of your support. VDare.com is one of them, to be sure. We were talking about, with Peter, the founding editor of VDare.com, the author of Alien Nation, about the Proud Boys before the last break. You know, that was an interesting thing, Peter, with the first and perhaps only debate, the way it's going, who knows? Trump, it was a classic moment. He sidestepped the gotcha question in the two-on-one debate with Chris Wallace and Joe Biden about the Proud Boys. Well, really, it was a question about the phantom specter of white supremacy. And when he asked, who are we talking about here, in so many words, Biden offered the Proud Boys. So the Proud Boys have become the personification or the manifestation of white supremacy on this continent. And, you know, as you mentioned before the break, they are a multiracial group. I am generally in favor of the Proud Boys, but I'll tell you this. They are so-called Western chauvinists. They, as it was offered by someone earlier this week, they would embrace literally any identity as part of Western civilization, save one. And we both know which one that is, and it's the only one, the one that far and away matters the most, whether it's homosexuality or whatever. They would say, yes, that's a part of Western civilization. There is one component of Western civilization, though, that is a third rail to them. They will not touch it. So it was interesting to me that that group, it's sort of like to me, and you by all means feel free to disagree with me, to me it's the Tea Party with guns. If that's what white supremacy means
Although,
in this day and
age, the Proud Boys, I don't think they carry guns. All they do is, you know, they will physically confront Antifa, and of course that's what they.
And God bless them for that.
Right, the ruling class does not want that to happen because they want to use Antifa as a club to beat down all opposition.
You know what? I was just mistaking them with the Oath Keepers with regard to the to that. So you're correct. Continue.
Well, also, I've known Gavin for more than 20 years, and he actually was with Vice, and he's a very successful entrepreneur in this kind of hipster genre that he had and magazine. And he actually reached out to me and because he was interested in VDare.com, and he started writing for us. It upset his colleagues so much that they actually had an intervention with him to stop it, tell him to stop writing for VDare. Because, you know, of course, we're not actually an extremist site. We were just in favor of immigration reduction. But and eventually they forced him out of Vice, and they had to pay him a lot of money to do that. And he went off into other entrepreneurial endeavors with their own problems. But the thing about the Proud Boys is, you know, he's not. He explicitly set the Proud Boys up as a multiracial group. He explicitly disavowed, you know, more hardline groups or groups that were alleged to hardline. He wouldn't let his people go to the Charlottesville. You know, and it didn't done him no good at all. No good at all. He's still regarded as a white supremacist, and the goddamn press couldn't even defend him. You know, I mean, I just don't understand what Trump was thinking of and including them when he was on Sean Hannity. White supremacists and the Proud Boys.
So that's the thing. No, I was just going to say very, very quickly, Peter, that's the thing. I mean, Trump appointed himself, I think, quite well during the debate, which was viewed by upwards of 80 million people. He sidestepped the question in classic Trump fashion, as he did so many times back in 2015 and 16. But then he offered the very tepid, in almost tongue-in-cheek, in a way, he said, I disavow the Proud Boys. I know nothing about them, almost nothing, but I disavow them anyway. I mean, it's sort of a Trump-esque way.
Right.
But it was certainly
well, you know, if you look at the one of the things about the Trump administration is it's totally full of no-goodniks, you know, what the Jews called no-goodniks. People are utterly useless and terrible. And so, that, for example, after he said this in the debate, immediately various Trump aides started to undercut him. And in particular, this Turk, Hogan Gidley, who was a part of the press secretary for the entire campaign, actually said it on camera that the Proud Boys are a reprehensible group. He was undercutting the president there. So the president's entirely surrounded by people who are just absolutely no good. And exactly the same thing happened at Charlottesville. If you read the books that have been published, Fire and Fury and so on, about Charlottesville, Trump instinctively knew that the narrative about Charlottesville was all wrong. As you and I both know, you know, what happened at Charlottesville was a peaceful demonstration was attacked by Antifa. And it was the police refused to defend it. The mainstream media lied about it. And it was a disaster. And he knew that instinctively. And he didn't want to condemn both sides. But everybody in the White House was desperate to condemn both sides. They just wanted to run for cover. So Trump, you have to give him credit for his instincts, but he doesn't follow through on them. And whether that's going to be
exactly that's the maddening
right
thing. That's the maddening thing. I mean, I want to root for the guy. I do root for the guy. I'm voting for him. I mean, I've made it clear in no uncertain terms. We endorse him. We need his reelection. I think we need to buy the time. It's certainly better than the alternative. It has been maddening, though. I think his instincts are there, but the follow-through lacks.
Right. You know, I was very struck by this book, Team of Vipers, by this Alabama consultant who got himself into the Trump campaign. I've forgotten his name now. I could look at it in a second. But he said that all of the White House, Trump was in New Jersey at the time of Charlottesville, the United Right rally. Steve Bannon was already off the train. He wasn't invited to New Jersey. He was already off the train. But this guy said that nobody in the White House had the least idea that something was going to happen in Charlottesville. They were taken completely by surprise by it. Now, we weren't invited to go to Charlottesville. We didn't attend. We didn't go to Charlottesville. We weren't invited to speak. We didn't go. We didn't publicize it. We were completely out of that loop. Not that it made the least difference. It would still be platformed by PayPal and so on. But we knew something was going to happen. Everyone knew something was going to happen. I was actually honest to be perfectly frank. Oh, Cliff Sims is the guy's name. He works for Yellow Hammer. He invented this Yellow Hammer website in Alabama. I mean, we all knew that it was going to go. There was something was going to happen, and we told our friends not to go because we thought, for reasons which I don't necessarily need to go into right now, it was going to be a disaster. Well, they didn't know. Well, they're in the White House, for God's sake. I mean, they're supposed to be watching right-wing politics. I forget now, James, were you there?
No, I wasn't there, but we did. I was not there, but we covered it. We had live reports from the scene the day of the event. We broadcast live on Saturday night, so we had people there calling in. It was probably our best show ever.
What we did was we started to be there. We started covering after it happened, and we said that this whole thing is a setup, and Fields quite obviously should never have been convicted, and the whole thing was a mainstream media ramp, which is what Trump instinctively knew. It was a racket by the mainstream media. But you know what it actually was a dry run for what they're doing now. They've been able to completely suppress what is actually happening in these 200 cities and these 600 riots, and it's actually been done by communist vigilantes, many of whom are actually related to Democrats. I mean, if you remember, the son of Kane, the vice presidential nominee, Clinton's vice presidential nominee, was actually arrested for being involved in an Antifa riot. And of course, he was given probation and nothing was done to him. The daughter of the mayor of New York, children of the mayor of Minneapolis and the governor of Minnesota have all been arrested for being involved in Antifa riots. So these people are integrally involved with the Democratic elite, and that's why the Democratic elite won't condemn them. Now, my question, of course, is why do I have to point this out? Why isn't the Trump campaign pointing this out?
Well, is that a rhetorical question, or would you like to answer it?
What do you think?
Probably rhetorical. Well, I can go into any number of levels of weeds and answer that for you. But it is an interesting question nonetheless.
I mean, my favorite explanation, frankly, James, is stupidity. I mean, there's an awful lot of people in the sort of professional Republicans who are just brain dead. And they actually do.
We were all at the
Go ahead.
I was just going to. We were all at the inauguration. You know, you were there. I was there. Jared was there. You know, all of the people on the air tonight were there, and it.
None of us got anything out of it.
Well, no, but he right after that, or perhaps even immediately before, began to surround himself and insulate himself with these people who have led him down this path to. You know, perhaps destruction here in just a couple of weeks. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we got one more segment. We could have gone 3 hours with Peter Brimelow tonight, and it wouldn't have been enough. We have one more segment with him, and we're going to make it count. Stay tuned.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
You know something is wrong when the media, global corporations, and governments are all colluding on a narrative that just doesn't add up. Do you seek truth, no matter where it leads? Want to understand how the world really works? Then take the red pill and register for the Expo of the Year. Come to G. Edward Griffin's Red Pill Expo, October 10th and 11th, on Jekyll Island, Georgia, birthplace of the Federal Reserve. And hear from Del Bigtree, G. Edward Griffin, Dr. Andrew Kaufman, David Icke, Alex Newman, Dr. Bradford Weeks, Sheriff Mack, John Rappaport, Tim Ray, and many more. Register to attend or live stream at home with friends and family at redpillexpo.org. That's redpillexpo.org. Because you know something is wrong.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused border agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, 4 grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved 4 checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. DefendAPatriot.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
The mistake will never be made again, ladies and gentlemen. As many times as he's been on this program, 1 hour with Peter Brimelow is not enough. But you can continue to access him 24/7 at vdare.com. Check it out. Support the work. Peter Brimelow is with us for one more segment tonight. But I am proud to have once been called the worst person in the world by Keith Olbermann, back when he was still a commentator on MSNBC some years ago. Peter, this is Keith Olbermann just this week. Let's take a quick listen.
Trump can be and must be expunged. The hate he has triggered, the Pandora's box he has opened, they will not be so easily destroyed. So, let us brace ourselves. The task is twofold. The terrorist Trump must be defeated, must be destroyed, must be devoured at the ballot box. And then he and his enablers and his supporters and his collaborators and the Mike Lees and the William Barrs and the Sean Hannitys and the Mike Pences and the Rudy Giulianis and the Kyle Rittenhouses and the Amy Coney Barretts must be prosecuted and convicted and removed from our society while we try to rebuild it. And to rebuild the world Trump has nearly destroyed.
All right, Peter, that is, you know, you expect commentary like that from the most radical and most unhinged of left-wing blogs. That is a man who is establishment media. That is an establishment liberal. We are completely untethered from any semblance of societal cohesion, which... frankly, it becomes the fate of any multi-ethnic or multicultural population. But in light of this rhetoric and rhetoric like it, which we see so often now in the media, how bad are things likely to get, regardless of whom wins this election?
James, you know, I think the future of the union is extremely dark. I'm just looking right now while we're talking. You know, there's been a Patriot Prayer member shot and killed in Denver. So this
yes,
is the third
yes.
lethal assault on I think another Patriot Prayer member killed in Portland a couple of weeks ago, and then at his funeral, one of these Antifa ran down and drove his car right into and knocked down one of the mourners, and he was in hospital with serious brain injuries. A miracle, he didn't die. His name has not appeared in the New York Times. There's no effort to follow up on what he did. I don't even know. I'm going to have to ask them to find out if the purpose is in custody. So I mean, there's a low-level civil war already underway. The only problem is it's one way. All the aggression is coming from the left. And Rittenhouse, for example, was clearly trying to defend himself. So was James Fields. He was trying to get home. And his car was blocked and attacked by an Antifa mob, who should not have been there because the police were supposed to have cleared them out. It was supposed to have...
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, I mean, it's scandalous. Scandalous what happened there. And there are many other cases. Now the only reason I hesitate in painting a portrait of complete darkness is, you know, James, I'm old, and I remember the Cold War. I remember meeting with Bill Rusher, who was in the publisher of National Review, in his offices in Manhattan, in I guess 1974, 1975. When he was trying to persuade Bill Reagan and Ronald Reagan to run as a third-party candidate. And he said to me after the interview, when he realized we were on the same, you know, side, he said to me, you know, confidentially, I think all is lost. And the red flag will one day wave over the world. So the last opportunity of turning it all around was in 1968, when Reagan ran against Nixon for the presidency and came much closer than people realized in the convention of that year. And Strom Thurmond was the guy who delivered it to Nixon. In any case, but Bill said, you know, we persevere because on the one hand, you never know what's going to happen next. And that actually is a principal clause of each, you know, the Prussian military theorist. You actually never know what's going on the other side of the hill. The other side may just be as desperate and chaotic as you are. And secondly, Bill Rush said, you know, the theological injunctions against despair. And it actually did turn around. I mean, just 4 years later, Reagan was elected. And I'm not
Thank
one of these people.
Were
you alive? It was the.
I was born in 1980. I was born. I was. Thank you for asking. I was born in June of 1980. So yes, I was around. And
well, you can't believe
so
the turnaround. You know, I mean, you really can't believe the turnaround. And we between 1975 and 1980, the conservative movement in the U.S. really did think that the end had come. And yet,
well,
Reagan turns around very, very quickly. I'm not one of those people who thinks Reagan was in World War II, didn't do it. He did a great deal. He defeated the Russians in the Cold War, and he ended inflation, which was a major threat that the economy faced, which they wanted to deal with, the left wanted to deal with price and wage controls, nationalization, and so on. So you know, in other words, miracles happen quite often in politics, and maybe we'll get
you
to
know, you're so,
but we need it.
You're so right about that, Peter. And we earlier this year, we had a special series entitled Our March Around the World. And during the month of March, we interviewed different leaders from different European nations. That was our March Around the World. And we had a former member of European Parliament on during that particular series who said something quite poignant. I'll never forget it. Even after all these years and all these shows, he said, our ability to vote ourselves out of the current situation may have passed, but our people have not passed. And, you know, even to recite that now, to repeat that, elicits a great deal of emotion with me. I say this so often when I'm giving interviews to other hosts, when I'm not on this program and I'm giving interviews elsewhere. I believe it, Peter, in the marrow of my bones, that even though I can't tell you exactly when it will happen, even though I can't tell you what the catalyst might be, I just don't see our people, a people so magnificent. I don't see us walking off the stage of history like it looks like we might right now. I just see us turning. I see us remembering who we are. I see that happening. I don't know why I see it happening. I don't know why I believe it. But I tell you the truth, my friend. I believe it with everything that I am. And I don't know when it'll happen, but I think it will. And there's hope to be had in that. There is hope. There should always be hope. I just believe we're going to turn it around. And you mentioned Russia. I mean, who could have ever imagined in the darkest days of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, where dissidents were getting a bullet to the back of the skull wherever they were found, who would have ever believed that Russia would have the turnaround that it had? Who would have ever believed that dawn would ever break again in Russia? And yet, here they are now, perhaps the key to the survival of our people. It can happen again.
I can tell you, in the late 80s, I interviewed a Columbia professor called Selim Biala about a Sovietologist. Nobody had the least idea, not the least idea, on the right or the left, that the Soviet Union was going to collapse. And yet it did collapse. I mean, people were taken totally by surprise by that. Everybody was taken by surprise by it. And so, you know, as I say, miracles happen quite often in politics. We just need one.
And one can be delivered here. If it can happen there, it can happen here. But our people do need to rise up. Our people don't need to be afraid. Our people can't be afraid to speak their name and to be proud of who they are. It's the most natural and healthy thing any person can do. Be proud of who you are. Now, Peter, with only a minute or two remaining, what a magnificent hour it's been. What a fast hour it's been. Always great to have you. VDare.com, ladies and gentlemen, I can't say it enough, VDare.com. Go there, support the work that Peter Brimelow is doing and has been doing for so many years. Columbus Day is on Monday. Peter, what does that mean to you?
Well, we're going to run a long article about how you know, there's this fantastic effort to extirpate Columbus, which, of course, means basically extirpating white America. And as you know, Jim, more than 20 years, 25 years, I've been, in fact, it's one of my few claims to fame Wikipedia. I've been always into this war against Christmas. And we always said the war against Christmas, the war against the West. And guess what? It's a war against the West. And this is they'll take down Washington there. They'll change the name of Washington, D.C. They intend to totally extirpate us. But they're not going to do it they're not going to do it while I'm around. I mean, the thing is, you know, you and I both have young children, even at my incredibly advanced age. And that's really the issue. What kind of world are we leaving to them?
Well, it's a very fractured world right now, but the most we can do, and I mentioned this at the very top of the program, I know that you are well aware that my third child was welcomed into this world just earlier this week, baby Caroline, and my second daughter, my third child. I will fight for her. I will defend her. I will protect her. I will raise her right. That's all any of us can do, and we will do it, and we will do it until whatever may come, comes. But I am hopeful, I am optimistic, and with the work of people like you, champions like you, as I mentioned it earlier in our promotional broadcast tonight, you are a champion of the West, and you have been your entire life. Thank you for coming on tonight. Thank you for the example you
Thanks,
set,
Jim.
For the family life you lead.
Keep in touch.
We certainly will. We look forward to the next time already. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Brivolo, VDare.com.
We'll
be back to wrap
can.
Things up in the third hour right
after away.
This.
There's more to come. Right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.